has design manufacturing capabilities, or satellite design manufacturing capabilities. Every other African country that builds a satellite that you hear of actually procures that from abroad. We have the largest space operations, the ground segment in Africa. We have over 50 antennas on the ground, whereas the next nearest, I think, is in Kenya, which is operated by the Italians, which has about 4 antennas. So you can see the scale of what we have inside of South Africa is very unique in Africa. And then on the Earth observation side, as I indicated, we have an archive that goes back to 1972, which is very unique in Africa in itself. So we have to take what we have as unique offerings in South Africa and see how we position that in the African market. And we're also working with the local industry in terms of repositioning that. And so what the Space Infrastructure Hub does, it helps us to bolster and strengthen the infrastructure that we have. So we'll see, for example, half a dozen new satellites coming through in the next 2 or 3 years. We'll see a new ground segment in Michoacin. We'll see a new data segment, which is more aligned to the fourth industrial revolution, big data, cloud solutions, and so on. So all of that have already started to be implemented inside of SANSA. And then aligned to the strategy and ensuring that we focus and implement that strategy optimally, we're also re-looking at our business model. So we're just concluding a process with the Government Technical Assistance Center in National Treasury, and they look at our business model in terms of our value chain, and that is being presented to the board, in fact, this coming Friday. And once that's presented, we would look at the macro structure of the organization, which would then focus on delivering on the strategy. So that's a big issue in terms of change that's happening inside of SANSA. And once we have the strategy and business model bedded down, we have to, in parallel, start looking at the change management aspect. So we're looking at a new set of values, a new organizational culture that will speak to our policies and procedures. So GTAC will also do a substantial review of all our policies and procedures, and our systems and processes are also going to be overhauled. And that speaks primarily to our IT systems. And then I think I gave you a sense of some of the things that we're doing on the IT front, but also upskilling some of our human resources capabilities going forward. So over the next 6 months or so, there's a massive change that's happening inside of SANSA to reorientate and position us for the next 3 years, essentially. So I try to keep the presentation as short as possible, just to give you a sense of the performance for the last financial year, apart from the one hiccup, but also to give you a sense as to where we're heading over the next 3 or so years. I thank you, Chair, for your attention and be open and receptive to any questions that might come. And I'd like to thank the committee as well for your support in terms of, you know, the political level interventions, ensuring that the funding is not severely constrained despite the budget cuts that we experienced. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues from SANSA. Apologies, colleagues, and from earlier on, I think I disrupted colleagues, the network issue was on my side. I'll now open, granted the three presentations by the NRF, the HSRC, and SANSA, I'll now allow for members to put forth their questions, comments, and remarks. Can I note hands of members that seek to participate in this? I see the Honourable Mananiso's hand is up. Honourable Sivia. Are those the only two hands that will go up, members? Okay, I'll note other hands as we continue in the discussion. Honourable Borchos. But as the discussion continues, I'll note the hands of members as they do go up. So I think we can start with Honourable Mananiso, Honourable Sibiya, and Honourable Borchos.
Honourable Madam Yusuf. Okay, thank you, Chairperson. So let me firstly apologize about this icon I just put, so I've changed it. Thank you, Chairperson. One must really appreciate the presentations made to us today, and I would like to acknowledge the fact that we can see that we have people hard at work in terms of doing what they are supposed to be doing when they are being given responsibility to take care of the public purse. However, I would want to say that with those who have got the unqualified audit with findings, I hope that they've got measures in place to ensure that they deal with whatever that was identified by the AG as limitations on their side. Secondly, Chairperson, I think I want to, this is a cost-cutting input to all of those who have made presentation, to say that in this portfolio committee, I normally like to emphasize the issue of indigenous languages, and I would want to just request and pray with people in this space that if really would want to deal with the inequalities, one of the things that I've noted is the issue of language, to say that we need to make sure by hook or crook that we use other indigenous languages so that everybody can be on board in terms of whatever that we are doing, more especially when they do programs that has to do with civil society. Chair, I've noted that in all this space, there's an issue of transformational agenda, and I want to check if there are plans in place to ensure that they deal with those imbalances of ensuring that women have been taken on board, people with disability, other races have been taken on board, as well as LGBTIQA plus society. So I want to check with all these entities if they've got plans on board that would say that perhaps if in this area we have a challenge of finding women, this is how we're going to deal with it. Not take out an advert for all, yet you know that you've got specific people that you would want to attract. So I want to check if they have plans on board with regards to that. The other thing, Chairperson, is with regards to the fact that one of the professors have indicated to say that the nice thing about COVID-19 is that we have learned that science and innovation and as well research and development, it is important. I must say as well, I can share the very same sentiment to say in this particular period we have learned how important is this particular sector, and be it that we have acknowledged the fact, I still believe that we would need to strengthen our society capacity building programs so that as you take South Africa international, you are able to take as well the society at large, not just to acknowledge the fact that internationally you are being recommended by those, but those who are within your country, they don't even understand what you're doing. So it is important that in this particular space we deal with issues of communication, awareness in terms of what is it that we're doing in this space as South Africans. I have a question with regards to schools out engaging civil society programs that deals with sex and reproductive health. I just want to check because of I heard that this particular program by HSRC, it's been done in African continent. So I want to check in South Africa, where this particular program being conducted, and if so, what is the procedures thereof if one wants to do this particular program in his or her constituency? So it's with regards to sex and reproductive health, that one. And the other question is on the issue of HSRC as well with regards to their district model pilot study. My question, Chairperson, is I want to check specifically in terms of
where was the study focusing on? And in I want to check again in terms of what was the study's fundings and if those particular fundings are being implemented as advised by the researchers, by government. It's with regard to the district model. And the other thing is with regards to I want to check on the issue of how is this research being used by us as government. Because I think most of the time we would hear when people do presentations to say that they outsource in terms of getting the study to be done and so on. So I want to check how effective and proactive is our government using the researches and the findings thereof. That's for HSRC. And then with on issues of SANPA, I've noted that when they speak on their shortcomings with regards to financial management system, as indicated by the Auditor General, they have noted that their issue is the limitation of IT. So can they just answer me on the fact that are they sure that it's only IT or it's the human capital that they have that actually creates this particular problem that they have, that the Auditor General has made findings on. So I want to check whether it's human capital or just a system. They must just give me that answer. And Chairperson, lastly, to all we have presented, I like the fact that as South Africans, we all agree about working locally but growing globally. However, we must take along South Africans to everywhere where we go, so that all of us as South Africans, we can be proud of South Africans by knowing whatever that we are doing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Manani. So, Honourable Fu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for all the presentations. And they must keep up with the good work they have done. Thank you so much. And we, NRF, I didn't hear the cause of the steady increase in the number of researchers holding NRF rating. What was the cause? And on the issue of policy, when will the policy be developed? And when will be implemented? On the issue under HSRC, there are other researchers have faced the challenges, and they didn't meet the output target of general publication. And what kind of support will be provided for those researchers? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Fumila. Honourable Boshoff.
Thank you, Jay. I would also like to extend my appreciation for the three presentations that we received. And it's better that the hard work is being done in the scientific space. I just have one is just a remark. It seems to me that the NRF is exceeding in reaching all its targets except the transformative targets. And then also that it struggles with the declining funding. And it seems to me that is a common problem actually with everybody within this science and innovation space, which is highly disconcerting as a decline in funding within everything, including transformation. Regarding the HSRC, let me just see what I have done. There's quite a number of things, but they are not all relevant. The Lowy International sorry, when you, I just wanted to inquire on that. Does it mean that there are these international contracts for research to be done, and is there anything, any mitigating factors or procedures that one could follow to increase the international revenue, or is it a result of the declining global economy? What should we look at today? Because we know that within South Africa, we are not looking at any way in increasing funding anytime soon. And then for SAMHSA, I would just like to know the planned project as Mikey something. What do they envisage? What influence would it have on the local economy? The specific reason why I'm asking is that the SKA's first advertisement showed the dishes of the Meerkat and the SKA was sheep grazing between it, and then first they said that there had to be some signal of silence, and then a complete economic that 130,000 hectares, which was completely taken out of the economy, and it seems as if there are even more appliances, normal household appliances, which might be out of bounds for people within the wide area of the SKA, and in such a way those kinds of expectations from a community seems to be ever increasing. One or the other hand, with other things, it seems that it's just, you know, there should not be smoke and other pollution. So could I just explain, are we looking at this other kind of scenario, or at the East Cape kind of scenario for my useful thing? Thank you, Jay. That's all from me.
Thank you, Honourable Boshoff. Honourable Pierre, I think you have mentioned in the chat that you are unable to raise your hand. So you can go ahead if you'd like to come on. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. I was made cold, so I could not raise hand. let me take this opportunity to thank all entities for continuing to do us proud. I think we need to indicate that all entities, all these entities appearing here today, they've received qualified, unqualified, sorry, unqualified audits, which is a good achievement. All these entities fall under the Department of Science and Innovation that received an award for the best department. So they've done extremely well, and I think from the CFOs, CEOs, senior management, accounting authority, the board members would like to, from the beginning, from the bottom of our hearts, to thank you guys for doing well, for not wanting to put your hands in the cookie jar. When you see many of our people in such entities like yours, they can't resist putting their hands. And maybe we must buy them handcuffs and put their hands against the walls. But I want to thank you guys for doing extremely well. You give us hope that there's at least the future of this country is still fine. To all entities, my first question to all entities, SANHSA, NRF, and HSRC, is what is your vacancy list? And obviously, because of the lack of economic growth, we're going to experience a serious budget cut in the economy growth in this fashion. How will that budget cuts, how will those budget cuts impact on you filling this post. Obviously, if you can't impose, then there will be a problem of capacity shortages. But then how are you planning on, bringing mitigating things to assist in this regard? And then I will start with Sandra on my individual question. You spoke about the satellite building that you guys are busy with. How much funding do you think you will need there for that to be properly and timelessly concluded? And maybe for Sandra, let me just leave it there and move to NRF. To NRF, Dr. Molapo. What progress can be reported regarding discussions to reevaluate the funding model of the institution? And what would be the ideal funding model look like? What additional resources of external funding are you guys considering there, if any? Maybe the last one will be, do you guys at NRF currently have any critical skills gaps affecting the performance of the organization, and how is that being mitigated? Maybe move to HSRC. I did ask what is your current vacancy rate. Another question with regard to that would be which specific areas are negatively impacted by these staff shortages, and what plans do you have to mitigate against this? And then maybe the last one or two, are there any discussions or plans underway to reevaluate the modeling, the funding model of the HSRC? And what will be the ideal funding model look like? And what additional source of external funding are you guys considering? Thank you very much. I think maybe I'm biased towards these institutions, but I honestly, most of the time, do not have much questions to ask them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and to all honorable members. I hope I'm not leaving any members out. I know that Honorable Malvo on the platform, Honourable Madada and Honourable Tambo are all on the platform, but they have not spoken, and I hope that I'm not leaving them out. I hope members do not seek to engage. Having said that, I think for me, one thing that has been of great importance to me as one has experienced, in the past couple of months of which we sat in this particular portfolio committee, is that a lot of great work is done in the DSI and across its entities. But ultimately, what then remains critical is in the inclusion and the representation of various bodies within the leadership of these entities, within the staff component of these entities, and within the beneficiaries of various funds or grants that are given by these entities. And the reach as well of the work that's being done by the DSI and its ability to truly be impactful to the day-to-day lived realities of the people of Africa. That is what for me becomes absolutely pivotal, and that is where I would really want us to start moving as a sector, you know, ensuring that this great work that is being done, we can truly see it translate in the most simplest of ways in the lives of the people of Africa. And so when I look at NRF, I just have one clarity, you know, and it's just, I think it's slide, I'm not sure what slide this is, but the number of NRF-funded researchers from designated groups, and it speaks of, or indicates, you know, black bodies and then female bodies, and the targets for females would have been 1,579, and the achievements is in 1,431. And one would like to have an understanding as to what the impact, what has resulted in that. Is it perhaps some of the budgetary prioritizations that have taken place due to COVID? You know, how have we gotten to that? Because that is not a favorable place for us to be in. And that also relates to the number of NRF-rated researchers from designated groups. Not that. We've achieved that. Actually, we've gone beyond that. So that one for me becomes a concern, particularly because there was a commitment by the department, and one that was also reiterated by the minister, to ensure that we increase the number of women who we put through into postgraduate studies and who we ensure become academics and professors in the space in our efforts to increase the amount of women who we find in these particular positions. And there was a lot of emphasis on that coming from the minister, and one was very happy to share that particular emphasis. So, you know, a deviation from that particular effort becomes of great concern to one. So, you know, we want to understand that. And then I've also been covered by and large in terms of the impact that COVID may have in terms of the vacancies being filled in the various institutions. I don't want to go back to the NRF again and just say, you know, for seek clarity, we have projects like IPEMBA, which are by and large found in our historically advanced institutions. And I'd like to get an understanding of how we've been able to expand the project. And maybe actually I'd like to pose this question to all three entities. How we've been able to expand the project, the programs and initiatives of the department to institutions, not only universities, but TVET colleges as well, you know, from a spectrum within the country. So not only those from historically advantaged institutions, but also those from historically disadvantaged institutions, and how have we managed to balance that? So we just took those input questions and remarks made by members, and those coming from myself, I'll then give back to the chairs and CEOs of the three entities to respond. So we'll begin with the NRF, move on to the HFRC and then FAMSA. Colleagues from the NRF?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and really thank you also for the very kind words that you and the honourable members have said about the work that not just the NRF, but what we are trying to do as a science system for the benefit of our society and the country. Chairperson, as you would know, we always present our responses as a collective, and we work together. So my colleagues and I will respond differently to the different questions. So I've asked my colleague, Dr. Beverly DeMont, to respond to the issues that the Honourable Manamiso raised around the issues of Indigenous languages and our plans on transformation. My colleague, Professor Ganson Pele, to talk to the issues that the Honourable Sevilla raised around the issues of rating and when our policies will be kicking in, particularly the one that I raised around postgraduate students. To the Honourable Letsie, my colleague, Mr. Kidiram Wakhile, will talk to the vacancy list. And the CFO, Mr. Bishan Singh, will talk to the implications of the budget cuts more generally, but also particularly to the HR component. And he will then, in turn, follow regarding the progress that we are making with respect to the review of the funding model that we had presented to the PPC some time back. And my colleague, Dr. Petio Matutu, will also talk to the work that we are doing with regard to raising additional funding from external sources. Critical skills, Madam Chair, will be taken up by my colleague, Dr. Clifford Mamani, the Deputy Chief Executive Officer, working with Mr. Kidiram Wakhile. And then lastly, and ultimately, I should say to you, Chair, I will request Dr. Pillay, sorry, Professor Pillay, to talk to the issue of the challenges that we've had regarding the slight reduction relative to expectation around gender-funded researchers, and particularly the women and the and Black researchers. But what I would like to start off with is, Honourable Chair, to talk to what you raised around how we expand opportunities beyond our historically advantaged institutions. So the two examples that I raised, GAMCA and HIREX, you would have noticed that the consortium includes HDIs, UWC, the University of Zululand. It also includes former technicons, which are now our universities of technology, DUT being a good example. Our PULISA program is very and exclusively dedicated to HDIs. And recall I raised the issue of the University of Venda, Fort Hare, Walter Sisulu, and Western Cape to name but a few. The idea is always to provide opportunities to all and in sundry, irrespective of where you find yourself. Our responsibility is to support our science system, irrespective of location, and particularly work with those that require more support than not to realize their full potential. We can, in time, with your permission, Chairperson, provide detail as to the extent of our support that we give to each and every one of our universities. And secondly, the extent of the usage by our universities of the national research facilities such as ITEMBA, SAO, SARAO, because all of those are national assets that are to be used by our universities, our students, our researchers, and so they're not the self-serving group of institutions, but they serve the national science system. Lastly, Chair, before I hand over to my colleague, Dr. DeMonts, our legal mandate, regrettably and maybe unfortunately, doesn't allow us to work with the TVET colleges because they do not currently have a mandate to advance research and to undertake research. And therefore, we are not in a position currently to expand such opportunities to the TVET sector. However, when it does come to issues of science engagement, and when Dr. DeMonts talks around issues of engagement, we do have plans to look at how we might then work together with them around the important work of getting the importance of science to all those that we should and reach, irrespective of where they are. Thank you, Chair, and I'll ask Dr. De Monts to talk to the issues that I raised earlier.
Thank you, Malapo. Good afternoon, and thank you, honourable members. If I can just talk very quickly to the issue of communication and awareness, and maybe also at the same time to the issue raised about outreach and how we influence the lived experience of our beneficiaries. I do agree with Honourable Monomiso that the issue of language is something that is important, something that has been raised, and especially if we are going to change the relationship between science and society, and language is one of the main media through which we articulate this relationship. In our efforts, we have found that over the last 3 years, with a specific emphasis on just this question, which has been raised by honourable members in the past, we have developed a science and technology youth journalism program where young graduates, especially unemployed graduates having a science and technology background, have been trained in the basic skills of science journalism. And this has, within the last 3 years, over 90 graduates trained in science journalism. And you know, for our country, the science journalism desk has readily dissipated in the communication field. This has been a great boost. And we have found that they have produced these young science journalists have been placed in mostly community media programs and produced over nearly 2,600 science technology related media stories, mostly in community media, in 11 official languages recorded thus far, mostly in radio, some in broadcast, print broadcast, but now mostly in radio broadcast as a primary medium of reaching really diverse groups across our country. And we found this to be something that the program will continue into the future. But it, as a focused effort over the last 3 years, we found it has really boosted science journalism capability, the number of stories at community media, and obviously in the diversity of languages. And we will continue with that program into the future. In terms of reach, in line with the main tenets of the district development model, which we ourselves as an organization are still responding to, but we've recorded for science engagement. That means broad awareness, broad popularization, and especially reaching learners through science camps, Olympiads, festivals, science centers, in collaboration with the efforts of the Departments of Science and Innovation. We've recorded reach of science and technology intervention in 52 out of 52 district municipalities. So some form of science, technology, and innovation conversation, events, engagements, participation recorded in all the districts. Obviously, the main thrust going forward is to increase the quantum, but just to reassure you that we have on our radar a record of reach, because I agree that we need to continue to engage at all levels of our society. So that is from a communication and awareness perspective. In terms of transformation, we must know that as early as 2016, NRF put into place a transformation framework, which speaks to four main areas that we focus on. The first is to look at the equity profiles of both our postgraduate students and the researchers within the higher education space who access funding from ourselves. And so you would have seen in the presentation that was provided, we spoke to the ministerial guidelines, and we looked at in our equity profile of students, especially from honours to postdocs, and showing you our progress against those areas, and also talking to the fact that to address the areas, especially where we in honours and masters, honours exceeded masters you know, exceeded in some areas, but definitely in doctoral and postdoctoral spaces, we are looking still to reach, obviously, the 80% point. But introducing a new postgraduate funding policy, which my colleague Jansen will talk to, looking also at our researchers, she will talk to the rating issue, but definitely introducing for ourselves a leading researchers and scholars program, which is looking to really build a pipeline of excellence, taking our young, exceptional researchers, our mid-career researchers, and fast-tracking them through focused interventions to leading scholars and researchers. And so that is a focused program that we are fairly advanced in terms of planning and hoping to release in the 2021, the call in 2021. So we are looking at those issues around equity profile. The knowledge enterprise itself, you would have seen large, this we are talking about looking at transformation at discipline-specific areas, looking at transformation in the research areas we fund. You would have seen we are talking about a research agenda, a knowledge agenda for the NRF, and looking specifically at expertise across the knowledge enterprise itself. We are also looking as an organization at the relationship between science and society, feeling that we must continue to drive a research agenda where the research engages with the issues of society, not just at the end where we want to maybe communicate or market, but really from the early stages of a research, from as early as the identification of the problem statement. How does our society become more engaged in our research agenda as an organization and obviously as a country? And then looking at the organization itself, some of the questions you've asked about our skills gap, our profiles in terms of our leadership, the staff, this organization itself, our transformation agenda for our organization. So my colleagues will address the questions that you've raised in each of those areas, but just to confirm that as an organization, we are looking at transformation in a number of areas, and these respond to the questions you have raised. Thank you very much.
Jay, if I may speak. What I want to indicate, firstly, is I want to express our sincere thanks for your very fine comments regarding the performance of the NRF. I'd also like to thank you for the support that's been given to us over the years. Allow me, therefore, to very briefly respond to the question by Honourable Member Sabir in terms of the Eurasia's researchers. As you can appreciate, the NRF's research and evaluation program is largely about a voluntary effort by researchers to present themselves through their track records as well as the research to be able to be assessed through peer review by both national and international reviewers. And as I've indicated, it's a voluntary system. We are pleased to indicate to you, and as you've seen on the slides, that despite our budget cuts, and despite us revising the incentive funding for Rachel's researchers program, we've continued to show an exponential growth in the number of researchers that are rated. However, we also note that the number of women and black researchers has to increase over time. Now, attaining a rating indicator you're an established researcher, is not an event, it's the journey. And for someone, on average, for someone to become an A-rated researcher takes about 2 decades. The idea, therefore, is to look at source and grow the number of black and women researchers. NCC, with our transformation policy, with our new programs that we are introducing, our targets, etc., the entire approach is to increase the pool that's available. From there, we will draw more, established researchers, and hopefully over time, the transformation and equity profiles of the rate of researchers would be more representative of the demographics of this country. But as I indicated, it is a journey, it's not an event, but we put everything in place in order to achieve
our targets. The second part that was a question that was raised involved students, and Chair, you very rightly pointed out your observations regarding women researchers and black researchers. As the CEO pointed out in his presentation, there are reasons that we can offer to explain why the number of black and women students has not met the target. The reason here is that we have a ministerial funding guidelines on the equity of scholarships. Now, we also have what we call freestanding bursaries, and these, as well as grant holding bursaries. The research chairs, which number over 250 in South Africa, as well as the Centers of Excellence, have a pool of money, and they would then submit the best students to the NRF for support within their budgetary framework. Regrettably, many of them did not adhere to the ministerial guidelines, and hence this impacted negatively upon us reaching those targets. However, we can assure you that we put new measures in place to insist that if those submissions do not meet the ministerial guidelines, the NRF would not be accepting them. The second reason is that, and as the CEO has pointed out, the value of the bursaries is quite a deterrent as to the uptake of the NRF bursaries. And a number of students who've applied for NRF bursaries and were awarded these bursaries did not take them up because they got offered higher bursaries somewhere else. And the policy of the NRF is that you cannot hold two bursaries for the same degree simultaneously. But that also is something that we're addressing through our new postgraduate funding policy, a funding policy that involves full cost of study as well as partial cost of study, based on excellence as well as financial need. But the actual positive part about this new funding policy, especially if you look at the full cost, is that we are not going to just support a student at the honors level. But if they perform and they meet the requirements along the way, we will support them from honors to masters to the doctoral status. And I think in this way, we then are able to, at an early stage, determine the equity and demographic profile of our student cohort and are able to retain them in the student's pipeline so we maintain that profile. Beverly also mentioned in passing about the Leading Researchers and Scholarships Program and Scholars Program. It is something that we are working on, and perhaps at our next meeting with the PPC, we'll be able to share those details with you. But thank you once again, and we thank you for your support.
Thank you, Colleen. Can I move on to the next entity, or will the chair, the acting chair or CEO, like to say something in closing?
With your permission, we can move on with your under your guidance. There were a couple of other areas that we hadn't responded to, Honourable Lizzie, if you would allow.
Please do continue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kovela, and thank you, Chair, and to the honourable members and our colleagues from our sister entities. My apologies, my camera doesn't want to work. I wanted to respond to the issue of the extent to which there is reach by the NRF and its entities into the communities, that surround it or in which those NRF facilities are located. And I just wanted to make the principle notion that we have in the NRF that socioeconomic impact from science and technology, from the science and technology context, emanates from three key aspects. One is a direct translation of the knowledge area and its products into applications and processes and systems that benefit society directly. In this case, the example of a Temba Labs is a case in point where nuclear physics and atomic physics knowledge is translated into radioisotopes for the treatment and diagnosis of cancer. The other one is indirect applications of of science and technology emanating, you know, from our activities, such as, for example, in Sarawos, which is our radio astronomy, you know, national facility, its applications for radio frequency interface monitoring, resulting in technology that may be applied in the monitoring of, you know, of aircraft, for example, you know, flying by. But in relevance to this particular question of the socioeconomic reach of our facilities, is the third element, which is about collateral benefits that arise out of the existence of our research and development facilities in communities. In particular here, I wanted to mention in the area of Sutherland, where our Southern African Large Telescope and Southern African Astronomy Observatory operate from, that community has benefited, for example, for the institution of a math teacher post, which we are in the process of recruiting at the moment. The facility also makes available its ambulance for the local hospital for evacuation and transfers of, you know, of critically ill patients. And we've also invested and supported the local hospital with materials for the treatment of patients. Also, there's a community center that has been established in joint partnership with the local community that provides computer and internet access, you know, for the local community, particularly for learners to be able to do their homework. And also, we are in joint partnership with the local community in terms of supporting the local tourism. As far as our Sarawo and the SKA project are concerned, again, we're supporting local maths and science teaching through the support of positions for maths and science teachers for the local schools. We have an artisan training program which draws the young people from the local communities who are trained in different aspects of engineering and technical support, and many, if not all, of the products of that program are employed, you know, by Sarawo in Carnarvon. We also have, in terms of supplementation of the local economy, in order to mitigate the impacts of the of Sarawo and the SKA, are supporting various local economic development activities, such as the local feedlot, in order to support their continued economic sustainability. Just as a last point around that, with the COVID-19 pandemic, both Sarawo and the SAO were involved in the National Ventilator Project, which is obviously at a national level, but that derives from the applications of knowledge and technology emanating from our national facilities. In Grahamstown, our Institute for Aquatic Biodiversity partnered with Rhodes University to manufacture sanitizers, which were made available free of charge to local health facilities in the Makanda area and adjoining areas. And finally, the Environmental Observation Network, which is our proto-national facility, has developed a risk and vulnerability atlas for environmental applications, which has now been utilized and applied to assessing the risk and vulnerability of local municipalities to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then on the question of the skills gaps, Chair, because we operate national facilities that require high-end scientific and technical skills, we do face, you know, critical shortages for areas such as software engineering or data science or other hard-level engineering. But our response to that is that we have each one of our major national facilities have or support bursary programs or scholarship programs that provide for training, such as for Sarawo in engineering and software and astronomy. And many of the products of that bursary program are employed by Sarawo. Itemba Labs has established what is called the South African Institute for Nuclear Science and Technology, which will train along the entire continuum from vocational to highly academic, qualifications in the area of subatomic physics, which will find applications in the operations of the facility itself. And finally, SIAB, which is our facility in in Makanda in the Eastern Cape leads the biggest and most successful marine science transformation program called PUTLISA, which trains black and female scientists in particular from historically black universities in the area of marine science, and it is arguably, I think, the biggest in the country, and it is now being expanded with the support of DSSI to include the establishment of joint science and research laboratories at the universities of Zululand, Walter Sisulu, and Fort Hare in partnership, and as well as UWC. In partnership with SIAP. So that's, in brief, a snapshot of how the presence of these national facilities and therefore the broader NRF in these communities is translating to direct and indirect benefit for local communities. Thanks.
Thank you, Clifford. With your permission, Chairperson, I'll ask Mr. Gidirang Mwakhile to very briefly talk to the issue of vacancies and the CFO, Mr. Bishan Singh, to indicate the financial implications with regard to that particular matter. Thank you, Chair. Mindful of that, we're going to be brief.
Thank you very much.
That's fine. I'd like us to be mindful of time because we're due to conclude at 1 and there are 2 other entities that must also come in, but I know that you're aware that the CEO. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me get straight away to the question on vacancies. Out of an establishment of 1,342 people, we have 1,260 filled, giving us 82 vacancies, which is a 6.1% vacancy rate. Our vacancy rate usually hovers around 3 and 5%, and we deliberately keep it there as a result of the process of ensuring that any vacancy that's not filled within 6 months, we review it. And this 3 to 5% is inclusive of the critical and scarce skills, which the lead time to fill usually takes a bit longer. I think the 6% is as a factor of we had to have a moratorium on filling of vacancies, hence we are at 6.1%. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, afternoon, Chairperson, and honourable members and all others on the platform. It's Bishan Singh, the CFO. I will deal with the key questions that were raised by Honourable Letsia regarding the re-evaluation of the funding model and additional resources and how we absorb the budget cuts. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I'll be brief. Otherwise, I can talk a lot about these three questions. We have developed a resource allocation model, Chair. And we have shared that with the department. As the CEO explained in his presentation, that about 25% of the funding is from the parliamentary grant and the other 75% is in contracts. The proposal was to swing that around with likely the majority of those contracts that are funded for multiple years. And we've got contracts that are being funded for the last 10 years or so. That's the first initiative, Chair. We've shared that with the department. The department's response is we do need to tread cautiously in view of the fact that the department has just put together its strategy and is in the process of its decadal plan. So we will continue to engage with the department regarding that. However, Chair, we've also managed or we're also in the process of refining that model to look at those areas that can create some flexibility in terms of aligning it to our NRF mandate, in particular the NRF Strategy 2025 and NRF Vision 2030. So we're looking at areas where the funds are released and where we could reprioritize those funds, and that's work in progress. Regarding the second question around the additional resources and what we're doing about it. Chair, there's a hype of activity around that as we are consciously aware of the constraints on the fiscus. insofar as that is concerned, and Dr. Matutu may wish to add to it, we continue to engage our local and foreign partners. For example, the First Land Foundation, we've just recently also received quite a hefty sum of grant of about 55 million rand from the IDRC and in conjunction with the DSI towards the COVID-19 Africa Rapid Grant Fund. Those are some of the things that are happening, Chair. But in addition to that, some long-term sustainability around our facilities. We have perhaps reported in the past that we are building the South African isotope facility, which is located at Itemba Lab. And our plan is that in the next 4 years or so, actually 1 year is already gone, that we could increase the radioisotope revenue from about 50 million rand per annum to 200 million rand per annum. And that allows us the ability to inject those funds back into our research system. So the last one is around budget cuts, what we're doing about it and how we're managing to absorb that. So we have reported in the past that our budget cuts was 753 million rand. We've managed to deal with that in the current financial year. In particular, by splitting it, I'm just going to look at a high-level figure. 400 million rand of that went toward researchers and 300 of that million, of the 700 million, went towards the SKA, which was offset from funding that they had carried forward. So that brought us to that 700 million rand mark. Insofar as further absorption of those cuts, we have, as Mr. Kedirang had explained, with regard to vacancies, we have put a temporary moratorium on that, and that has helped us to absorb as well some of those cuts. Okay, I will stop there, and I'll allow Dr. Matutu to add anything regarding the additional resourcing efforts. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Singh, and Chair of the PPC, members, honorable members, over the past 5 years, we have managed to leverage over 5 billion if we look at the contribution or the money leveraged through our Centers of Excellence, our Research Chairs Initiative, and internally within the NRF. So internally within the NRF, what we observe is that for every rand that we invest, we get at least we manage to leverage more than 3 rands. So that is, in a nutshell, per annum, we invest about 78 million internally within the NRF, and what we receive from the external parties is about 263 million. And that money is not coming to us alone. It's coming to us and our partners, particularly in the rest of the continent. So you will find out that we will be investing a small amount of money towards an initiative which involves us within the continent, maybe 15 science granting councils, and then you will find out that we are able to leverage a whole lot more internationally. But as for the investments where we contribute with bilateral agreements and so on, you find out that the investments are one-on-one. So whenever we invest 50%, then the other party invests 50%. It's when we partner in a multilateral fashion that we get to get huge benefits. And considering our science and our science system within the continent, you find out that those investments come back to us, and also they teach us better how to create appropriate processes of working together as the continent. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Thank you for your understanding and for the time that you've given to us.
Thank you very much to colleagues from the NRF. We truly appreciate your comments and your responses, and we hope that members have been covered by your responses. We'll now move on to the HFRC.
Thank you, Honourable Member Quanta. There are about 12 questions that were put to us, and we'll try to work through them expeditiously. So the first question about Indigenous languages, which Honourable Member Mananiso raised, simply to say that last year, and we couldn't report this, we convened a major national symposium on Indigenous language developments inside of the country, and it was a really important occasion where we were able to show the retreats that are happening inside of our institutions and the failure of the country to respond to this challenge of first of all restoring us to a position where we were in our universities some 20 years ago to a position in our schools where we are seeing the uptake of use of Indigenous languages right up to grade 12. It was a very important symposium, Chairperson. Also participating in that symposium were scholars across the country looking at the question of reading. And these two questions go alongside of each other. And we are colleagues in the HSRC who are deeply invested in this question of the impact of our children to read properly on their learning. And so I don't want to report that the country has turned a corner around all of that, but simply to say that it's an important part of our anxiety and concern. To the question of transformation. So in the HSRC, we have been using our existing policies to be able to monitor and track how we are doing in terms of reaching representativity in terms of racial groups and gender, we are now institutionalizing that very much more in our selection committees. My colleague Yakimin Rousseau will talk about our vacancy list in a moment. The reality is that we've not been able to make many appointments in the last while, but we are using those processes carefully to ensure that we try as much as we can, and it's not easy. I'd like to acknowledge that it's not easy to keep ourselves on track in relation to particularly the targets that we are setting ourselves. But we have a whole lot of supplementary initiatives and interventions that are currently underway inside of the organization to build the pipeline of young, particularly black scholars who are able to compete positions and opportunities inside of the HSRC. I'd like my colleague Lightness to answer the question about the work that we are doing with Amplify and sexualities education, and he can speak immediately after I've done. But to talk about this, Honourable Member Mananiso also raised the question about the district development model. We haven't fully gone even into the field yet, Honourable Mananiso. So COVID-19 stopped us in our tracks. We were about to put a team, I think it was in the Gauteng area, to start monitoring what is going on there. But as soon as conditions allow, we will be reporting very much more, I hope, productively around that. The question of findings and our government is using our findings. So this is an issue which arises in thinking about impact. And in our new strategic planning, we have gone to great lengths to be clear about what it is that we can do and what it is that is the responsibility, particularly of government. And so we, in our theory of change, are making it absolutely clear that it is our role to put at the disposal of policymakers and decision makers the best available information which is needed to be making decisions about the problems and what the possible solutions to our problems are in the country. And through that, we are expanding our collaboration, setting up MOUs with government departments. We have a number of practical relationships with a whole range of government departments in which we avail ourselves as resources for helping them refine the questions which they may wanting to be asked, but also to, from our own side, be developing and expanding our policy briefs around particular questions. Every single year, what we do is we have a request from our minister to take the top 10 policy briefs that we have put together, and we are asked to explain why these policy briefs are so important and why they've been chosen. But I have already, in the course of this year, seen a whole lot of policy briefs. I have to sign them off, which are extremely, I think, practical in their advice in terms of what needs to be done. The question of communications is related. With our new strategic plan, we have in our KPAs a particular key performance area around community engagement. And so we are setting that target pretty low at the moment, but the idea is for us to have a number of, I can't think what the target is at the moment, I think it might be 3 or 4, solid community engagements where we are able to bring together the technical knowledge that comes out of our research in forms that are available, but also for easily mediated use in dialogues with communities. We were able to do this around the land question earlier towards the end of last year, and we assisted with sorting out those responses that Parliament had invited around the land question, and we were able to have a couple of sessions. And they were very, as you can imagine, volatile, but extremely valuable around those issues. We just also the other day had a policy dialogue on water and the water economy inside of the country, and it's really important. And I also mentioned, of course, this is for this current year, not last year, but there are a lot of dialogues which I could be talking to. We had a dialogue on the on COVID and vaccination, with a range of people. And the way in which we are assessing these is to look at registers. Who is coming to these things? So it's not enough that we have the researchers who are attending, we are making a fuss about the attendance and the profiles of the attendees at these meetings. The question about our lower international revenue. The short answer is that our income from external sources has a profile of dips and peaks. Last year was a dip year for us. We are now going into a year, this year, in which it's absolutely clear that our external income is going to be significantly higher. And the basic reason around why our external profiles, income profiles look like that, has to do with this big work that we do around HIV and AIDS. When that work comes in, it is of a magnitude which is almost larger than everything else that we do in the organisation. And it's of the order, this year it will be of the order of almost 200 million. And so it significantly impacts what those profiles look like. I'd like you to come in to talk to our vacancy list. I think our vacancy list is 6.2. We're also implementing moratoria around all of that, and we can hear from Yakamin. Our relationships with historically disadvantaged institutions, we have a preference in building partnerships that we are always going to prioritize historically disadvantaged institutions. Our first call of engagement with institutions around the country is with universities like Walter Sisulu, Forte, Limpopo, and Salt Lake. We have intense relationships with those institutions. We don't work with PVET directly. We are very involved in that PSET discussion inside of the country and what that PSET plan for the future is going to look like. I personally I serve on a number of the planning task teams around PSET. We do a lot of work on monitoring and evaluation in terms of skills development inside of the country. We talk with the National Department of Basic Education, and we get drawn on in task teams frequently for all of that. But simply to say that we are very close to those kinds of issues. I think I've covered most of the issues. Will you go, please, Lightness?
Thank you, Queen. Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. With regard to the one question from Honourable Mananiso about the Out of School project for youth funded by Amplify Change, as I indicated, that's been run in a number of Eastern and Southern African countries. Basically, it involves our researchers working together with NGOs working in the area of sexual reproductive health and rights. In South Africa, an NGO known as Partners for Sexual Health, which is based here in Cape Town, has been chosen as a partner. They operate out of 4 provinces in the country. And essentially, the projects are being run in those 4 provinces. Plus, they also have a youth website called Siyakwazi Youth Network. And that's the way that they impact on youth from across the country. I just wanted to also touch on an issue raised by Honorable Osinia, which was about the shortfall in the peer-reviewed journal articles. I did mention at the beginning that that there are always publications which are in the pipeline, which unfortunately this time we were not able to finalize. But the point is that in essence it's not always easy to predict exactly when a published journal article will be released. But however, I'm pleased to say, and perhaps I've been looking for the positive aspects of the COVID-19 situation. People have been more focused on publications, and so far we are doing very well indeed, so that hopefully at the end of this financial year, that will be one indicator where we'll be very pleased with our performance. I will stop there. Thank you.
Sorry, Lycus? Do you want to say something about the international funding?
Oh, yeah. Just in passing. Thanks, Quinn. So, with regard to international funding, I think it's really important to emphasize, and one can see in the graph shown by the CFO about the cyclical nature of international funding. The major sources of funding have been PEPFAR, which is the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, and also there is a MasterCard Foundation, and more recently Ford Foundation. But I want to balance this with the fact that we also get growing external funding from from departments in government. For example, we have this large project funded by the Department on Food Security, funded by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development. Also, the COVID-19 Antibody Survey is funded by the Solidarity Fund. And something I forgot to mention, which we are grateful for, is the surveys, online surveys we have been doing on social aspects of COVID-19 have been generously funded by PSI. So there is a fair amount of funding coming both from internal sources locally as well as internationally. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Jacqueline.
Dear Chairperson, Honourable Members, I'm going to be very short. As indicated, our vacancy list, as reported on the 31st of March 2020, we had 31 positions vacant. Now, because we had the moratorium in the previous year, we were very prudent about appointing new positions and seeing how it went. Our expenditure was under the amount that was put as the cap by National Treasury, and that in a sense assisted the organization in the current year. When we started our budget process, obviously everybody would like to have had more positions, but we reduced those positions to only 17 to assist with the budget cut that was done in terms of the COVID that was given. Our organization felt it was about 10%, which was about 32.5 million. Our biggest expense is salaries, and we had to see how we matched into that. The organization as a whole went through a realignment last year in terms of the mandate areas, the research side, and looking at support services in the current year, also reviewing the funding as well as the business model, seeing how better we can optimize and use what we've got in terms of the organization. The funding model is a bit of tricky because obviously we do get our two main funding resources from government as well as from our research projects. And our research project is obviously our clients at the end and how we can utilize that.
but we're looking more into the business model of how we do things, how we can be more successful at receiving or getting the proposals to do the works, and we're specifically looking into those items for the organization. As indicated, thus far the year has been very good to our organization, and hopefully we can only build on to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for your responses. We'll now move on to SAMHSA's responses. We're sitting at 12:47, so I would you to finish at 1, just to indicate to members as well that we will be postponing the consideration of minutes and to tomorrow's meeting. Thank you very much. You can continue, colleagues from SAMHSA.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity for answering the questions. I'm going to start off by answering two questions and then pass on to my executives. The first one is around the funding issue, and I'll take a somewhat different approach to answering the question. So we work in the national system of innovation, so apart from just being the institutions in the national system of innovation, we all sort of plug in. So when the NRF gets a budget cut, the implications is that all of us are affected. Because as I indicated in the presentation, we get some of our funding from the NRF as well. So that gets hampered. And we found the same during COVID-19 when government departments get budget cuts. It affects the contracts that we normally land with government departments. So it has a systemic effect. It's not just at the institutional level. So if you bring it back to SAMHSA, when we experience a budget cut, it has an effect on the system as a whole, not just on SAMHSA itself. So when SAMHSA is cut or is underfunded, it has a systemic effect. So that's some of the budget cuts that I think we need to be very, very cognizant of in terms of what the extent of the effect is at the end of the day. The second, Chair, is on the Mikeson chain. There was a question around the Mikeson chain and what sort of benefits we would be seeing from this initiative. So in a nutshell, the Mikeson chain site will have 3 or 4 antennas, which is around 34 meter diameters. At the end of the day, with the new site, we will see essentially about 60 more new staff coming on site. But there's a massive civil work that will need to be done in terms of getting the site ready. And so in that perspective, we'll essentially use the local expertise in the area in terms of sourcing the workforce for the civil infrastructure. We have been in discussion with the NASA colleagues to say that if we do land this, the kind of social benefits we're looking at is essentially providing Wi-Fi for the local community and also setting up a science center at Mikeson Chain. So when people are driving past, they could stop and have a look at the site itself, and there will be a museum on site. So Chair, there is, in terms of the discussion and the initiative with NASA, there is a discussion around the possible social benefits we can accrue from the hosting of the facility. And obviously this will draw a major attraction in terms of visitors, because we are looking at tracking in all of the missions that's going to the moon and to Mars and beyond in the next few years. So that will definitely have a draw card. Chair, I then want to just call on my executives to answer very briefly in this particular order. And this will talk about the plans for gender and transformation from the organizational perspective. Dali, our CFO, will talk around the audit issue. There's a question around whether this was an IT only or an HR problem. And we'll discuss how we're dealing with our vacancy issue. Amal will talk about there's a question around the funding that is required for the satellite segment. And then Leanne will close off on how we're working with the HDIs and the TVET colleges. So I'll ask Aniswa to start off. Thanks, Chair. Aniswa?
Sorry, I pressed the video only. Apologies for that. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon to you committee members and members of the other institutions as well. Thank you, CEO. For our gender and transformation policy, I can take it into two prongs. One is what we're doing internally, and this is more focused around what our EE plan entails. And you would look, if you see our statistics from the report, that 72 out of the 104 employees that we've got are female, so that's about 72% female representation. And if you also look at how this distribution is occurring across the organization, there are two more areas where we're needing more representation of females. The second aspect of it is the outward looking aspect in terms of how we are actually making sure that the space sector itself is transformed. And this, we approach it from the pipeline all the way from what we do with our outreach around STEM and getting all the way to how we actually provide services to government entities. Just today, if I were to give an example, our female employees were actually holding a webinar while we're in this meeting on leadership, women in leadership, and they've invited number of speakers from other entities within the National Science of Innovation to actually talk about their leadership progress. And this is aimed at giving a view to the young women within our sector in terms of what it is to become a leader as a female into the space sector. Also, we have Bring a Girl Child for shadowing. So we take the learners and they're shadowing for a day or a couple of days, some of our scientists during their work. The intake of the interns that we take, if we look especially for this year, it's predominantly females. And if we get into the industry as well, we would find that we know that the space industry is not transformed, let alone on the gender side. So the conversations have started to become quite intentional. We now have a space industry association called Last Space Inc., which was quite supported and facilitated by SANSA to be established by the industry. One of the key mandates that Last Space Inc. has been given from our side is to look at gender, geography, and generation in terms of the transformation of the space sector. When we implemented the Space Infrastructure Hub or our new national space programs going forward, the contracting is one of the aspects that we'll be looking at in terms of how do we make sure that the way we contract supports and fosters both the gender and transformation of the space sector. I think I'll leave it to the Chair, CEO, and give other colleagues a chance to respond.
Thanks, Dali?
Thank you, CEO. Well, CEO, I'm responding to the question about the audit findings. The error that happens during the drafting of the financial statement, I say it's caused by the use of spreadsheets, but it's human error to the result of the use of spreadsheets. So that's why we decided to have a system to eliminate the human error through the use of spreadsheets. But sometimes you find that the finance team will have different versions of the Excel, and when you deal with auditors and give them different versions of reports, it creates problems, and in terms of the Act, that's a contravention. So that's why we introduce these financial reporting systems. But I wanted to touch base, I know CEO, you spoke to this issue, but I think it's important that the committee itself understand this issue of budget for TAMS. At the moment, just to share with you, Jefferson, we are busy drafting a proposal for additional budget from the National Treasury. Obviously, we're working through our department, ESI, so we understand our situation that we need to have additional budget for critical vacancies and operational needs. But that is still in the pipeline, Chairperson. I just want the committee to understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Dolly. Anne?
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chairperson and Right Honourable Members. Yes, funding is a challenge for SANSA, as with the other entities, with our current and future budget cuts. CEO has mentioned in our presentation we are in a period of significant growth with new projects coming on board, And our makeup of staff is mainly based on knowledge-based staff, that's our scientists, technicians and engineers, etc. Our current staff complement is 236 approved positions with a vacancy rate of 54 vacant posts. That equates to approximately 23%. That probably sounds quite alarming, but however, it's mainly focused at our professionally qualified level and mostly due to the Earth observation, space engineering and space science program vacancies due to the process we're going through to realign these programs to be able to optimally deliver on our mandate and set us on the right path for our future investor funding, which will then allow us to move away from our reliance on our parliamentary grants, which is where our staff are funded from. So we have carried some of these vacancies until we ensure that we have the correct structure in place to help us move forward. The space infrastructure hub will mean that we will need some additional resources on top as we anticipate growth by possibly another 50 staff on top of our current complement. And we are hoping that the private investor funding will help us secure the sustainability for SANS for going forward. And we are also busy repositioning ourselves with revisions to our business model and macro structure. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Anne. Amal?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members and committee members. So I'll be quite brief. There's just two parts to the answer in terms of the satellite funding. I think the committee are aware that we originally endeavored to develop the first operational satellite, EOSAT-1. We conducted an independent panel review last year on the satellite program, and now we're working closely with the DFI to secure funding to complete the first mission. In terms of green future, most of our space missions is directly related to user requirements, and we're not building just one satellite, but we're certainly building several satellites, and these satellites are there to deal with issues concerning agriculture, food security, disaster management, and they all feed directly into government objectives. The investment that we're looking at, we need to secure around 3.3 billion for the satellite segment, and we probably need close to about 4.3 billion for the entire value chain. So the investment is not just on the satellite side, but actually on the entire value chain of the space system itself. I think what I just want to point out quickly as well is that all of this funding that we are developing for the investment in space systems is to develop our local space economy. So this money goes into the local space industry. This will allow us to create more jobs, create more research, new intellectual property, and obviously commercialization of technology. I just give you an idea, there's about 1,000 satellites that will be built year on year for the next 10 years, and this is giving sort of an opportunity to enter that market as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amal. Leanne?
Thank you, CEO. Good afternoon, committee members and colleagues. I would answer the question on working with HDIs and TVET colleges. So within SANS's means and with our department and in partnership with our stakeholders, we are dealing with the camp to work with the greatest number of universities across the country. One of the advantages that we believe SANS has is that because we're not a degree granting organization, we can work with any number of universities without the normal competition element. So we create opportunities for HDIs to participate in our projects through, for example, and I'll just give two examples. We have an international space weather camp aimed at final year students from across the country who get to partner with students from two other countries and learn about space weather. And they get to travel as well to one of the other countries, as well as working in our space weather project. And then we have a long-term collaboration with the University of Port Hare in Earth Observation. They have a remote sensing laboratory and DGIS. And we work very closely with them and make sure that their students have access to our platforms and are part of our projects. So those are two major projects that we have where we involve HDIs and give them opportunities. We also have a student administration office to ensure that we are accessing all the universities and that we are caring for the students and making sure that they have what they need when they work with SANS and SANS research. So our student administration office makes sure that we attend all sorts of career fairs. And we have stipulated a percentage of career fairs per annum that need to be at HDIs to support their initiatives to promote careers in space to their students. So we work very closely with them on that. Another example is that we are appointing a research chair, the first one for SANS in space weather. thanks to the support from the NRF and from the Department of Science and Innovation, and our main academic partner for that research chair is the University of the Western Cape. However, we stipulated in the framework agreement that we would not only restrict our research chair to one university, but the research chair would have a main academic partner and then be allowed and eligible to work with a number of other universities as well. And the idea there was to bring other HGIs into the partnership. We also have a long-standing relationship with the Cape Peninsula University of Technology and the QSAT project. And in fact, Sonza was instrumental in assisting CPUT with the first payload on the very first South African CubeSat, the LACQB1, which has just celebrated 7 years in orbit. And then finally, on the TVET colleges, we have not been able to do much until recently with the TVET colleges. However, I do want to point out that our internships are not only in research and technology, but also in our support services. A number of our interns have come from Hoyland College, which is one of the TVET colleges, and we've assisted by giving them professional development experience that allows those young students to qualify. The TVET colleges require them to get practical experience, and so on, so can participate in that program, those programs. And we plan to improve on that and to expand that in the future. And in that line, we're currently working on our skills development framework, which will also show the partnership that can be had between the DSI and the DHET, now that we're under the same minister, and allow us to utilize space as a driver to create excitement in science and technology and also provide a career path for many young people in the country. So we have many exciting projects underway, and we plan to expand our work in this area. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think we've answered all the questions. So thank you for your attention, and I must apologize for taking you 3 minutes over time. Thank you, Chair.
No, that's okay, colleagues. Yeah, I can imagine how hard it is to report all the work we've done in a year within, you know, the time frame that we are given. So we must also apologize for, you know, having to make you work under pressure. But we thank you very much for the presentation we have made and your responses to the questions that have been asked. I think by and large, you know, the sentiments remain the same, that we need to ensure the presentation and, you know, be absolutely unapologetic about that, which of course speaks to also increasing the synergy between various sectors. So I mean, right from the beginning with basic education, moving into higher education, and then into you know, spaces within the within the various entities. So it doesn't only lie within the entities to ensure that there's increased representation, but, you know, it needs a concerted effort by various stakeholders to ensure that we can have the type of representation that will truly speak to a non-racial and non-sexist South Africa. I then want to, I think something that really come out from our discussion today are issues relating to finances and funding for various entities, and that's something that we are aware of within the DSI at large, and it's been reiterated a number of times from various entities in today's briefing, but also by members in this sitting or in this meeting. And another matter that, you know, has come out a lot is a reach in terms of representation and when we essentially localize the science that we're producing and the opportunities that are present in order for them to benefit the majority of the people of in our country. So, honourable members and colleagues, I don't want to distort much of which we have spoken to today, but I think what I'd like to do is to encourage entities to continue doing the great work that they're doing, and we've noted some of the challenges that they're facing, and we will continue to advocate for you know entities to be assisted in the spaces in which they seek to be assisted in order for them to meet their targets. So we encourage entities to continue doing the great work that they do, continue having administration that is par excellence and truly representing the government of South Africa in a favorable manner. So having said that, colleagues, I'd like to iterate that the minutes that we were supposed to consider today, we've moved to tomorrow, seeing as tomorrow we only have one agenda item, which will look into the letter that has come from the CPUT-FRC, raising a number of issues at the institution. So after that meeting, we will then consider the minutes. I don't think we can call the meeting to an end. Thank you very much, colleagues and honourable members, for your time.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honourable members.
Thank you. Bye.